Marilyn Dennis and Jamar. Wake up. I love this show.
Chum 104.5.
Oh, no.
Well, is it ever too early?
We don't know.
The weather's so good. I mean, why not?
You do know we've skipped two big benchmarks before we've even, like, been able... What? We haven't done Halloween. We haven't done Thanksgivings.
I know, but it's cold. It's cold when it's time to do this next activity. Why not do it now?
I don't know. It got under my skin a little bit. The other day, my neighbors, not my direct neighbors, but I guess a couple houses up the block.
Yeah, right.
I'm driving down the street and I see Christmas lights in the house already.
Are they on?
Yeah, they're on. And they were flimsy, too. So it wasn't even like a full-on Christmas light show. It was like a flimsy, like, three-string Christmas lights. I'm like, really, guys? Come on.
Oh, stoner lights.
Yeah.
Starter lights. Oh, yeah.
Stoner lights.
You'd be like in a dorm room or with a black light in the background or something like that.
Yeah.
It was weak, and I was just like, already?
Where are they? On the window. On the window.
And
I
was
think
thinking,
you're right, Caitlin.
It's got to be a little too early for holiday lights already. It's got it.
I tell you when it sometimes starts in my neighborhood. It starts with the people put up or have people put up white lights, blue lights for Halloween. They kind of make that kind of, and then they kind of emphasize the tree in the front yard that's scary and spooky. Then they'll put a couple of blow up spiders or something.
Right.
And then you transition into Thanksgiving. You put the two pots out there with the cabbage and the pumpkins.
Yeah, the gourds.
Right.
And then after that, it's time. And so the Christmas lights are already up because the weather's good. Get them up now. You don't have to turn them on now. I don't think your neighbors know if it's on or off anyway. But anyway, that's what people do.
Extending the excitement, I understand why someone would say, that's why I do them early. But let's let the holiday live in the time of the holiday.
So don't turn them on. Put them up, but don't turn them on.
Yeah, maybe I'll turn them on, but I don't know. It really just looked odd to me.
Yeah. It's like when we used to live at university and they would put the American flag up as a drape. Right?
Yeah.
Like, or foil on the window.
It's a lot.
Or just have that one string of lights because, it's that time of year. Yeah, some people, we have shows like the Marilyn Dennis Show. We can help you to do it properly.
So when is the right time? Like, what time is the perfect time to put up the holiday lights? I personally think if you put them up right after Thanksgiving, I'm not mad at you. Really, I think right after Thanksgiving makes sense to me.
October Thanksgiving. You're not talking about American Thanksgiving.
Well, I'm probably talking about American Thanksgiving. But you know what? Since here in Canada, right after Canadian Thanksgiving, do it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no, see, to me, Canadian Thanksgiving wraps up, beginning of October. So I don't want to see them until after Halloween at the very latest. And a lot of people feel like, really, it's after Remembrance Day. That's November 11th.
That's correct.
And so after Remembrance Day is the time when you can start Christmas decorating. For me, it feels right to start getting excited about Christmas and doing holiday stuff as of December 1st.
Right, because then you have like almost a full month.
I want to see December in the calendar.
Of December vibes.
Yeah, because then it feels like I genuinely get excited.
Right.
I don't want to take the sheen away from Christmas. And if I do it too early, then what are these lights really for? It creates a philosophical dilemma that I'm not totally comfortable with.
Jamar, I agree with Caitlin that they should go up after Remembrance Day. I also celebrate two Thanksgivings. So I have a little bit of something up for Christmas, for Thanksgiving,
sure.
In November. And then it's full on December 1st.
Okay,
because I think, why? Because I put everything up and then, that was fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So anyway, there you go.
And then it's the people that leave the Christmas lights up late too, right? I don't know.
Into Valentine's Day.
No, but they don't know how to work their lighting system. Honestly, they don't. They don't. Anyway, you do you.
Do you?
But don't feel pressure from your neighbors.
Maybe put up a little shade on the side of your house so that they'll be, I don't know. But happy holidays. That just sounds weird.
Why not?
All right. Hey, Tracy, what's up? Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good morning.
Our E-Talk Entertainment Update. Tracy Belcher joins us.
I'm going to do a hashtag TBT.
Okay.
And Throwback Thursday, because a few weeks ago, the day before TIFF started, I was flown out of Toronto to Montreal on Porter. I'm making it sound very exciting, but it was very exciting, with my intrepid producer, Heather Lynn, and we had a top secret assignment to go interview Celine Dion.
Oh, wow.
My first time ever sitting down with the Queen. And she was everything that you would want her to be. She was lovely with her team. She was amazing with us. And we talked about so much. Of course, she's got a new album coming out in November, November 15th, called Courage. She's going to be launching the Courage World Tour in Quebec, which is, you know, amazing. She's wrapped up Las Vegas. And for the first time ever, she's going on tour and she's not bringing her twins with her. They're now 8, Nelson and Eddie. And she said, you know what? They're really situated in Las Vegas because, you know, like every parent knows, there's a lot of extracurriculars that goes on with being a parent. So she said,
The formative years.
She said she had to be selfless and, like, you know, it obviously it's going to be hard for her and she's going to be, you know, going back and forth to visit with them. And we also talked about her fashion, you know, and people looking to her, and she's just really taking it as fun, and her being at Paris Fashion Week, and we also spoke about Renee, and when I asked her about recording this album, because it's the first time she's recorded something without Renee around, and she took me really through the stages of grief, you know, about diagnosis and dealing with that, and the moments between her and him where she talked to him and he was not really able to communicate, and but communicating to her that she must go, the show must go on, basically.
Wow.
And then then at the end, and you know, by this time I'm really trying to be professional, not get caught up in my feelings, but it's Celine Dion, you know, she's always so very candid and open, as you know, Marilyn, and she said to me, then you have to be able to let the person die.
Yeah.
And she said, not give them permission, let them go. But she said, you know, she was very open about it. And she sang a couple times. And then I was going to open my mouth to sing something. I thought, what am I doing?
But, you know, that's what the song Courage is all about.
It really
is. Not hearing that voice anymore, coming home and not seeing and telling them about your day anymore. Mm-hmm. That person is now absent from your life. And it takes courage to move on. And that's what it's all about. Where do we see this full interview?
So part one was last night.
Yeah.
Part two, Save the Best for Last, is on tonight on E-Talk. And her new album, Courage, is released on November 15th.
Yeah, she'll be here 9th and 10th of December. Thank you, Tracy.
Thank you.
E-Talk's on tonight at 7 o'clock on CTV.
Mark Maron is here with the Marilyn Dennison
Show. I am. I'm mostly here. I'm on LA time, but I'm mostly here.
But see, you're a real radio guy, Mark Maron, because you showed up even though you're on LA time. You understand morning radio.
Oh, I used to do it. Yeah, we used to do a news heavy show when I was on morning radio. So I had to get up at like 2:30.
Oh, that's too early.
Yeah, and be at the place at 3 to crunch the news for 3 hours to get on the air. It was kind of crazy how, like, I used to get like what the equivalent would be, like two large Dunkin' Donuts coffees and a bag of M&Ms. And by the time I started talking, I was so manic that people thought I was some sort of radio genius just because my brain was on fire.
And what time would you be done with that?
Yeah. We'd be done at 9, and then like you kind of walk around in a daze for a few hours. I used to say that doing morning radio, it's sort of like you're walking around all day like you've just been in a long pillow fight. Like your head is sort of numb.
Say that louder for the people in the back, please.
Well, they don't. How can anybody know? Yeah, we have to. We're like, we're like.
What's wrong with us?
12-year-olds, because you have to go to bed at 8:30. Uh-huh. If you're up at 9, you're like, oh no, I'm in trouble. How am I? If I don't get 5 hours, I'm not going to be able to function.
Hey, I'm looking for pizzas at like 10:30, thinking I want lunch, and nothing's even open for breakfast yet.
Well, you know, back in the day, you used to at least get people, sponsors would show up. There used to be morning radio shows that I would do as a comic where you'd walk in and they'd have full barbecue, and you'd be like, what's happening? And it's 6:30 in the morning, and you're like, who cares? Let's eat some ribs. So I guess they're a sponsor, and I'm like, great. Where's the pecan pie?
He gets it. You know, I just want to say, I'm a couple years older than you are, Mark Maron. I want to say the bedtime now is at 7 o'clock.
Oh, my God.
And here's the relief here. We get to play songs in between so we don't have to talk constantly.
Catch a nap.
Catch a little bit
get
of a nap.
Get a nap on the song.
They're called light comas.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know how it feels. Well, it used to be where I used to get in my mind, it's like if I can get like 6 or 7 hours total. So like I'd get off work, we'd do post show, and then I'd go home. I'd go like, I'll sleep for 2 hours, and I'll go do comedy, and I'll still get the 4 hours later. But you never feel correct.
You never feel like you get caught up ever.
Oh, well, I don't miss it.
Well, you've been really busy.
Thanks for coming in.
I feel good. I feel bad for you guys.
No. We feel bad for you. We're looking at what you got on your plate. Joker, the film you starred in there.
I didn't star in it. Now, let's just clear that
up right away. This big movie is a star. Let's just put that very, very out there.
I have one scene with De Niro, and I'm sort of...
But they're
billing me. Like, it looks like I'm third lead, but, like, I just texted with the director yesterday because I want to have him on my podcast, Todd Phillips. And I literally was like, did the thing make it in? I don't want any surprises at the premiere.
Oh, yeah.
And a big chunk of it did not.
Let me tell you something. I did a minute scene in the TV show Empire, and we had a big party for me. Like a full party with champagne for my three lines. Trust me, you're a star.
Well, yeah, but that's what I've been, the whole time that the press has been going on, I've made it clear that I did one scene. And Todd says, I'm in this moment, and then I'm around at the end. So I'm there, but I had to, I kind of diffused the whole thing for a year now. Like, because they were billing, I was getting all this press. I'm like, I'm in it for 40 seconds.
That's awkward, I guess.
Well, twice my scene in Almost Famous, which I thought was going to take off my whole career.
And it didn't. But you're here.
Yeah, it's been a long, interesting run.
Let's talk about the fact that, you know, really, podcasts. How long have you been doing that? 10 years now?
Yeah, I'm coming up on 10.
That's amazing. Before anybody else knew what a podcast was, why did you go into that?
Desperation. Brilliant? It was like, at the time, there was a few around, and I certainly didn't invent anything, but I'd done a run on radio for a few years, and then I did a streaming thing at the same radio outlet that I did the radio on, and that was out of desperation because I was going through a divorce, and I needed to pay for the divorce.
Oh, wow.
So they, like, literally, when I did the last contract for the streaming show, which I knew would fail, I was like, I'm going to need this amount of money up front so I can stop this. And they're like, you got to give me this, like, right up front now. So I can give it to her and get my life back.
Plugging holes in the bucket, right?
Oh, for sure. And then that happened. Then we did that for a year. And then we were sitting there and I was looking down the barrel at, you know, I didn't have much draw as a comic at that time. I had some radio experience. I knew guys were doing that thing and I was sort of in trouble. So we were like, I told my producer, who's been my producer since 2004, I said, can you figure out how to put these up? And we made an agreement with each other. We'd put up a new show every Monday and Thursday, and that was the only agreement we made. And it sort of evolved, and that's how it sort of started. It was not an interview show. I got home to L.A. I got in my garage. I asked a buddy about, you know, what mics do I use? And I sat in that garage, which, I was thinking about using for other purposes because I was so depressed at one point. And now, like, that turned everything around.
I love that. You know, use what you got. Go with your gut. Yeah. Don't overthink it and see if it sticks. Yeah. And it did.
Well, there wasn't even that much thinking. It was like, you know, I'm in trouble. I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah.
I can't. Here are these mics.
But, you know, we fast forward now. 5 million downloads of the podcast a month.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but okay.
It's amazing, the numbers. And the people that walk through your door.
I know, they come in my house.
It's not the garage door anymore. It's now up in the bedroom now. Am I right now?
Well, I've had to move it. Like, I got a house, a new house, but it's got a garage. It's a long story. I'm getting work done so I can work in the garage again. But right now, yeah, they got to walk through past my bedroom to an extra bedroom where I've set up these sound panels and made a little pocket. Yeah, and I've had Letterman came over recently. He was on. Oh. It was so funny to see your childhood hero, a guy whose show, you know, you fought your whole life to be on, just kind of walking up to your house going like, hey, so this is it, huh?
That's
like,
great.
It is.
Great.
Is it?
Come up to my bedroom. Weird.
Exactly. It was a little weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he was great. I got a really interesting, unique interview out of him.
That's so good. Well, you always do.
I love your stand-up. I love Too Real. You've got a show tonight at Meridian Hall.
Yeah.
7 p.m.
Where? At Sony.
Sony, yeah.
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 Big.
Yes, it is.
There might be a few tickets left. You know, it's weird when you sort of do these shows. It's sort of like... I'm just telling you, I don't know what you got out of me being here this morning, but if you do know who I am and you did not know about the show, I'm telling you now. There's a show. I'm doing it tonight. I have a podcast,
that.
You know, twice a week, and I've been plugging this show for probably a year.
Sure.
Right? And then I'll do the show, and people from Toronto will come up to me like, I didn't know you were coming. I'm like, what do you want me to do?
I did radio.
You want me to come to your house? You want me to email you personally? I mean, I did everything I could possibly do.
Well, we're so glad you're here. Yeah. We're going to ask him.
Well, because you talk a lot about, like, your insecurities. You're very honest. Like, you kind of, like, lay it all out there. And it feels like, getting up on stage and doing stand-up is like the most nerve-wracking thing I could imagine anyone doing. So how do you feel comfortable doing that?
Like, I've been doing it 35 years.
But even just to get started, like the first time you got up there, you're like,
I don't remember what was happening. Look, if you're a guy, back when I started, the club system was what you had to deal with. And if you had this idea that you wanted to be a comic, I mean, you really got to want it. I don't know. There was no really ever a plan B for me. I wanted to be a stand-up, and then you start doing it, and you figure it out. I mean, there were years where I was a little angry. I've processed a lot of things over the years on stage. I've done like 5 or 6 CDs, 4 or 5 specials, over 35, almost 40 years of this. And being in relatively unknown, like not being able to really sell tickets for 30 of those years. But being respected and enough work here and there to keep going, who knows why? It's just after a certain point I used to do... It's like when I started the podcast, when you commit your life to something that has no security and you don't really know how it's going to go, and you're not really thinking about that because clearly you're a delusional, infantile person. Like, you're not planning ahead if you commit your life to that.
Right.
But there comes a point where it's not working out, and you realize, like, there is no plan B. When I'm in the garage thinking, like, what am I going to do with my life at 45 and I'm starting a podcast, there's a moment where you're like, hey, well, if comedy's not working out, I could always... And there's nothing there. The last job I had was a grill cook in college. What am I going to go back to a restaurant and say, like, can I cook pancakes? You know?
When did you know, Mark Maron, that took off, that you knew it and you started getting these really unbelievable names coming to see you? Not you going to see them. They're coming to see you.
Well, it became sort of a thing, to come to the garage. It was kind of an odd thing because the podcast thing hadn't taken off. And in the first few years, I just remember people coming out to where I lived in my part of L.A., which is not like no one needs to go to Highland Park. Where I live. There's no industry in Highland Park. So people would drive there and walk up my driveway and be like, where am I? I'm like, it's all right. It's a nice neighborhood. Like,
yeah, sure.
Is this where we're doing it? I remember because I'm rewatching Breaking Bad for some reason because I need evil in my life.
And they had that movie coming on too, right?
I know. It's exciting. But I remember when Cranston came over to my house at the old house, and he walks up, and there was a couple of problems with that for me because I was deep into Breaking Bad and all I wanted to do was talk to Walter White, and I could not separate him from the character.
Right.
And it was difficult. But he walks up and I'm like, so he says, so this is it, huh? And I'm like, yeah, John Hamm's been here. He's like, oh, Hamm did it? All right. So, there was a period there where it had to be qualified somehow.
Validation.
Yeah. Who were you most fearful of interviewing? I mean, you were excited about it because we all have to interview and we're like, okay, I don't really want to screw this up.
Well, I have a certain amount of dread and anxiety before any of them because I do sort of like keep myself kind of in the moment. I do a little bit of research, but you really don't know, what you're going to get. And I'm really committing to sitting down for at least an hour if I can.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to let somebody go. Even people who are not that compelling, I'm sort of like not a therapist, but I work on a schedule. I'm like, we're getting an hour.
Yeah.
So my producer can work with something in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been intimidated by people, when I... a lot of times it's musicians because they don't really have to talk. It's not, and they don't have to do these things a lot of times, musicians, because there's a mystique to it.
Yes.
So, like, I remember when I interviewed Neil Young, I was very, he's a Canadian guy, right?
Yes.
That was very intimidating because I didn't know that he didn't like interviewers. He didn't like being interviewed, and he's difficult. I didn't know that because I don't do research.
Yes,
he was selling that Pomo thing. He had this box, this alternative iPod.
Yes,
right, that had a bigger bandwidth.
Right,
so he was sort of on that, and he wanted to sell it. He was a partner in it. They had sent me one with the headphones. It was fine, but I remember he comes over with his like 70-year-old posse. These like 3 gray-haired dudes, and I've got my stuff, and they were supposed to take it back. But he looked around my house and he saw my guitar and he sort of took a shine to the house anyways. And I said, there's the thing and the headphones. You can have it back. He's like, nah, you can keep them. So right away, I'm like, oh, good. Maybe he likes me. So we get out into the garage And I had this big plan, you know, because I play guitar and I have this old amp and I know it's like the amps he uses. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing I knew about him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm figuring like that'll get me in, right?
Right.
So he sits down. I'm like, yeah, look at that. I got you probably recognize that amp. And he's like, nah, not really. And I'm like, no, no, you're not.
That was your in.
Yeah, you're not going to do this to me. I know. And I knew that. So it became really kind of weird and dicey for about 5 or 6 minutes. And then we started talking about I was on the nicotine lozenges, which I quit 3 weeks ago, which I'm going nuts.
You're doing well. Keep on.
Yeah, no, it's making my brain on fire. But I got him laughing, and then he ended up talking about Pilates, and it got a little crazy, because the best thing that can happen for me is that I get a conversation that isn't about the stuff that everyone expects. It's just about human stuff, and if that happens, because I don't have questions prepared, it's more of an organic thing.
I know.
Then if I get at least 20 minutes of that in an episode, I'm thrilled.
You're a great conversationalist and so good at what you do, and I'm so glad that you came in this morning. You know, everyone was so excited that you're here. My family members were so jealous that I'm about to have a picture taken with you, if you don't mind.
Exciting.
Mark, you are on tonight.
7 p.m.
7 p.m. at the Sony Center in Meridian Hall.
Yeah, come down. I think there's only about probably 1,000 seats left.
No way. Mark Maron, it's such a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Will you promise to come
600. I'm sorry, 600.
600?
Promise.
Hey, no,
what?
No,
what
we're just sold another 100. Another 500 is only left now.
Have you seen the show's ratings? We guarantee you about 5 seats.
35. No. Well, that's good.
No problem.
Will you promise to come back to Chum and just be a part of the morning show anytime?
For the whole time?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you want to get up early.
All right. I'll do
all right. And by the way, we play music so you can nap in between.
I'm going to sleep now.
Okay. Mark Maron, everybody.
Hey. Get up. Don't hit snooze anymore. Marilyn Dennis and Jamar. Oh. Wake up. I love this show.
Chum 104.5.